He owned them.
Was there a tarp involved?
He peed all over them.
Sorry, take a mic. It's not you, it's just not
That's fine, I'll just... Oh, hello. So, this is technically his second press conference since he was elected. And a CNN reporter...
Jim Acosta?
Attempted to ask Trump a question about the, I guess the DNI report, the BuzzFeed reporting from yesterday, and Trump just, I'm wrong? Okay.
Yeah, sorry. Benji Sarman from NBC News reports, as multiple other places have, the president-elect Donald Trump entered his first press conference in 6 months, facing hundreds of questions.
So he met behind closed doors with all of these reporters, that's when he... Okay.
That was off the record. It's not a press conference.
Okay, you're right.
Sorry.
No, it's fine. So,
luckily, your both
My apologies.
I will not use that card. Sorry, you're right. The first one was technically off the record, but it was widely reported that he just like spanked these mainstream media reporters and really embarrassed them. Also, it was just embarrassing that they agreed to just do it.
This is a message for my fellow WBAI listeners from a guy who just happened to be born and raised right here in the Republic of Brooklyn. In case you didn't know it, and I think you do, January 20th will be a day that will live in infamy. This is the day that a certified wacko will be sworn in as president of this country. On that day, I'm gonna play hooky and party instead with Earth Mom and Randy Cretico, who I admit does a pretty good impression of me, and other WBAI producers, and do a little karaoke myself at a low-cost, high-yield fundraiser for WBAI. It's only $10. That's $10. 7 p.m. on January 20th at the Commons Cafe, where else? 388 Atlantic Avenue in downtown Brooklyn. Come on, let's party before we all end up in jail.
Yes, best hurry up. It's WBAI New York. The time is 8 o'clock. Time for Off the Hook.
Ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. Only live on for the best, expect the worst. I hope that's understood.
It's another exciting edition of Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
Kyle.
Hi.
Special guest Mitch Altman.
Hello.
And down in Philadelphia, Bernie S.
I'm not in Philadelphia, but I am in Pennsylvania, and greetings from that state.
You know, Bernie, you could tell us you're in Philadelphia. It wouldn't make any difference because we don't verify anymore.
So enigmatic.
Yeah, we strive for accuracy in reporting. Greetings from Northeast Pennsylvania.
Full disclosure. And also greetings to Jim in the studio.
Hello.
And, we have a lot to talk about tonight, a lot going on. But, you know, first I'd like to say hi to Mitch, who has not been here in quite a while. You got to move that microphone a little closer to you, though. Yes.
Hey.
There you go. So you're back from where now?
Most recently from Berlin.
Okay, all right. Mitch, as you may know, is the designer of the famed TV Begons, that many of our listeners have received, and those of you who haven't received them, we're still sorry about that, but hopefully everybody will get the premiums they asked for. But what else have you been up to, Mitch?
Well, I was at 33C3 earlier before Berlin.
For those who don't know, C3 stands for Chaos Communication Congress.
Correct.
C3. And 33 is the 33rd incarnation of that, 33rd year, hence 33C3.
Yep. And I've been going since the 23rd, so I kind of like these things. They're grown quite large in recent years.
15,000 German hackers. Well, not just German hackers, but hackers in Germany.
Yeah, collecting in Hamburg most recent years from all over the world to present the projects they really love and to share with one another. Talks and workshops and music and food and just about anything. It's really cool.
Well, I can imagine the tone this year or last year must have been a little different because of all the things that have happened. Mm. How would you put your finger on that?
Me being an American over there, there's been a lot of talk about what's going on in our country, and they look to me to try to give insight, and I wish I had more insight to give.
What's a typical question you might get asked walking down the hall?
What's with you people?
Yeah, I get that here. I really do. Or what's with you, but that's another thing. But yeah, how do you answer that for people in Europe that don't understand? Of course, you know, we can point to a lot of leaders over there that don't make any sense either. So
back in the day, there were a few occurrences.
Oh, in this day too, though. In this day as well.
Yeah, well, the whole world seems to be going in a right wing direct trajectory. In so many places that I've been traveling around the world, they're really hurting. There's really only a couple of countries I can think of that in recent elections have been going in a direction I think is more positive, mm-hmm. Austria and Italy.
So now, this is the first time you've been back in this country since when?
Let's see. Well, I was home actually for an entire month, which is kind of rare for
that is very rare.
2016, I was only home 2.5 months. I was in traveling in Europe for about a month, and before that, I was all over the planet: Brazil, China, Europe, and all sorts of places where I was giving talks and workshops and answering the question, "What's with you people?"
Uh-huh.
To the best of my ability.
Well, okay, so all that said, can you tell us more about what 33C3 was like? We've been to a number of those German conferences. I like to think that the Hope conferences are more or less inspired by conferences like that that take place in Europe. I hope that's still the case. I hope it's still got this international flair to it and mm-hmm. and kind of rebellious spirit. Or has it gotten too big for that?
No, I think the spirit that you described is definitely there. It's grown really big. People in CCC, the Chaos Computer Club, which puts on the Chaos Communications Congress, mm-hmm. they really did a good job in keeping the spirit as best they could while giving more people the opportunity to experience these amazing events. So unlike other conferences around the world, hacker conferences, they don't shy away from politics, and Hope definitely is inspired by that, which is one of the reasons I love it.
I'm glad you raised that point, because we do get some guff from people. Is that the right word? Guff is
good.
Yeah, okay,
enough.
Guff. Absolutely. Yeah, we get guff from people who say that we shouldn't discuss politics at all. We shouldn't be political. We should just talk about computers and hacking and things like that. You know, I see the same kind of reaction whenever anybody other than a politician talks about something political. And not that, you know, the direction of the country is necessarily a political issue. It's something that affects us on so many levels. But particularly with hacking, I mean, hacking is right there front and center in every story you're reading about today. So to tell us, in essence, to shut up about it and just let those quote-unquote experts deal with it seems to me to be highly irresponsible and quite frankly, dangerous.
Yeah, I couldn't have said that better myself. Everything we do is political. I mean, what is politics? It's doing what we do, and it affects the world around us, right? And how does it affect the world around us? Do we want it to be positive? Do we want it to be negative? I hope we want it to be positive. But we have to think about these things in order to have a positive impact in our world. Everything we do has an impact. How? What are you going to do? What do you choose to do, and why do you choose to do it? These are really important things to think about. I was asked at sort of the last minute. I think someone had a cancellation at 33C3, and they asked me to give a talk. It wasn't technical at all. It was, you know, somewhat personal, but I put it in context of what's going on in our planet and show that it's really important, well, it's always important to do what we do to make a positive impact to the best of our ability, but what's going on in recent times in our country and elsewhere really points out that that's super important for all of us to do.
And how was that received?
Very well.
We were watching a number of talks from 33C3 over here in the USA because they were all streaming. Yet another thing that they inspired us to do here, we stream our talks as they happen at the Hope conferences. But that tone, that feeling, that curiosity, exploration, rebelliousness, it was all still there. I felt it. And even though we were thousands of miles away, it was really good to feel a part of that.
Yeah, and they do that purposely so that people can share in the joy of all that.
I think one of the unique things about these is they're less corporate, and that attitude of not getting into politics is a very like antiseptic corporate attitude.
Yes.
So if you're used to a trade show or you're used to a security conference or something,
mustn't upset the sponsors.
You wouldn't want to get these sponsors upset. Exactly. So that sentiment then becomes something that it's very easy for Americans, I think, to go to, mm-hmm. Almost out of like this self-censorship or like our own sort of PR firms.
No, I'm feeling that now. I'm actually feeling that in our own social circles where people are just kind of, okay, you know what? We've talked about this enough. Time to move on. We don't want to, you know, be saying the same things over and over again. First of all, you won't be saying the same things over and over again because there's going to be no end of new material to deal with. Just today alone, my God, that press conference. I'm referring to the first Donald Trump press conference in over 6 months, I believe. And to see CNN almost thrown out, to see, you know, a completely legitimate media organization being treated as if it was making up facts when in actuality they were doing exactly what they should be doing. This is the future. This is what we have to look forward to. And we need to be standing in alliance with people like this and realizing that we're all in danger here. Every outlet and WBAI is first and front in that. You know, I think that the mantra we're going to keep falling back on over the next however many months or years is we are all Pacifica, because, you know, Pacifica is used to getting thrown out of things. but to see that almost happen to a major news organization simply for not you know, this has to do with the BuzzFeed documents that BuzzFeed released, I believe, yesterday. Purport to show Trump in some kind of compromising position. I don't even know the facts. And I don't even know if these are facts. Supposedly, they have not been substantiated. That is all CNN did. They simply reported the existence of this and the fact that they weren't substantiated. And that is enough for them to be blacklisted. Just mentioning it. This is every two-bit dictator behaves like this. You have to present him in the most positive light. You have to show good pictures of him. Believe me, I've been to some countries where this is how it works. But to see it happen here, now you'd better be speaking out on this. As much as you are awake, you should be speaking out on this. And you know, I'm sorry if people are uncomfortable by that, but the situation is an uncomfortable one, and we're not going to shy away from that. Bertie, any thoughts from wherever you happen to be in Pennsylvania?
Yeah, I happen to be watching that press conference as well, and I was like, wow, this is really going in a direction that we're going to have to experience for the next 4 years, maybe. And it was the news story was that these documents were documents containing this information about Trump allegedly in a very compromising situation when he was in a hotel from Russia. The story was that these documents were a two-page report about these documents was presented by the intelligence community to the president of the United States and to the president-elect. That is the story. Not mm-hmm. None of the contents of the document was documents were reported by CNN.
Well, Bernie, you've said enough. You've said enough now to ensure that you will get thrown out of a press conference. And Donald Trump will be writing down your name now and adding that to the
list. Did you hear the applause, too? There was applause while Trump was vilifying CNN as a fake news media, and you know.
Yeah, but Bernie, where was that applause coming from?
The applause was coming from Trump's staff off stage. This was staged applause.
Exactly.
You couldn't see that. So this is like, wow, this is really this is the first press conference that Trump has done for months. And so I hope he does a lot of them, because we really need to see what this guy is thinking about the press in this country, which is a really important part of our society.
Well, you know, it's interesting too, because I was reading up on this, and again, this is all very, very relevant to the hacker world, because we are in the midst of all this. There's all kinds of information that many of us are privy to, all kinds of security issues that many of us know how to exploit, and all kinds of facts that the mainstream misses that we can discuss, regardless of who it happens to favor. But one thing I noticed earlier today, I was reading news stories about this, and I went to Google News, which is, you know, a good news aggregator, but I noticed something very disturbing, that the story about this press conference, the front and center story, the first one that appeared, was from none other than Breitbart News. And Breitbart News was headlining that this is CNN is fake news, because that's actually what our future president said, is that CNN is fake news, equating it with all the Pizzagate morons and the all the truthers and the birthers and the cure cancer now a miracle cure type people, equating a legitimate news organization with that. That was our future president doing that. Breitbart News doing the same thing in their headline, saying CNN is fake news. And that, if you went to Google News, was the first story you would see about that. And I complained on Twitter. I called Google News out on that, saying, why is that happening? And I don't think that I have any sway at all. But I did notice it's not there anymore. So I don't know. Maybe other people noticed it as well. I hope so, and we need to know how to make sure things like that don't continue to happen, because, you know, there are legitimate news outlets. We don't agree with all of them. You know, I can name a bunch that I think are awful, but at least I know they're legitimate. They check their facts. They report when they get something wrong. And then there are the illegitimate ones, and they are on all sides of the spectrum, and we can't mix the two up. We have to know what the difference between the two happens to be.
Yeah, you mentioned truthers and birthers. Just for any listeners unfamiliar with those are the movements spearheaded by the president-elect himself.
Well, yeah, I guess so. Conspiracy theories of all sorts. And, you know, I like a good conspiracy more than most people, but mostly, you know, on TV, where it belongs. Have you ever tried to run a conspiracy? It's difficult, all right? Somebody always talks. Somebody always, you know, drops evidence that makes it really, really obvious. Yeah, I'm not saying it's impossible, but come on, it's absolutely absurd how much attention certain things have gotten in place of actual news that isn't being reported. So this is something to really, really focus on. And that's something I think we have a unique ability to do.
Emmanuel?
Yes, Bernie, please.
Did you notice President-elect Trump say, quote, on the press conference today, he said, quote, hacking is bad, but look what was learned from that.
Yes. I did pick that up. It's a good soundbite for us, I think. But, you know, you have to wonder, though, once this guy actually gets real power, and I think of all the power he has now, it's nothing compared to the power he will have in just about 9 days. What's he going to do? What's he going to do to people that he thinks are a threat? And you better believe he thinks hackers are a threat, because it's been nonstop talked about ever since the election. And it's not always going to favor him. And the first time it does not favor him, the first time something gets leaked that makes him look like an idiot, and believe me, that will not take long, what is the reaction going to be? And that's something we have to be prepared for. That's something we have to really understand. We put out a magazine about hacking. We put out the only regular printed magazine in this country about hacking. So I think maybe we might have something to be a little concerned and worried about. This radio station, another thorn in his side. It's right in his town. You know, he's sitting there right now at Trump Tower, can turn on the radio to 99.5 and hey, here we are. And we're talking all kinds of crap about you, and a lot of it is real and provable. And he doesn't like that at all. So this is the kind of thing that we have to be concerned about and we have to plan for.
Well, the president-elect has shown a great love of liking things when they're good for him, not liking them when they're bad for him. Mm-hmm. Sometimes in the same sentence, sometimes in the same breath. And this is free speech. This is the media. This is late night television. This is all manner of things, and hacking is among them. So, you know, great for this hack that made his opponent look bad or worse than him. But you know, the first hack that ends up with him the target, you know, then hackers are in general are going to be all terrible.
Yeah, I agree with this sentiment in that I don't want to come off as like too catastrophist, but it is a real thing that we may not even get the moment to allow him to get it, as far as how security works, how talking about information security works, the amount of importance that revolves around sharing information and having the widest possible amount of information. Because as soon as you you take away outlets for people to talk about this stuff, like a magazine or other outlets, in your own interest, you're hurting the ability for independent security researchers and other people to disseminate information about systems, which inherently hurts the security structures and the ways things are built in the future. And I'm just fearful that if we aren't talking about this stuff and we aren't supporting one another out the gate, we may not even have a chance to explain why we're here and why it's important that we teach students and everyone about hacking and hacking culture and why it's important to innovation and so on.
Yeah, and I think you touched on a good point as far as supporting each other, because that's something we're going to have to learn how to do. And it doesn't mean just supporting the people who fall into lockstep with what you say. It means supporting people that might not agree with everything or might not agree with most of what you say, but still are in danger and are feeling intimidated and threatened. So that's something, again, we're going to have to learn.
Yeah, and I go around the world helping people form communities in the form of hackerspaces. And at Noisebridge, where I was before going to Europe, we had a Trump preparedness workshop.
Oh, wow.
And it was a whole bunch of people who volunteered to teach what they know about security. Having secure email, secure encrypted hard drives. If you're a journalist, how to make sure your sources are kept secure, and all sorts of different topics that people taught each other on. And it really is about people coming together, no matter what your viewpoint is, supporting each other so that we can remain as free as we possibly can. Our country has been through a lot of, it's only like 200 some years old, but we've been through some really dark periods. We've managed to survive, even like the second president put in place the Sedition Act, right? And no one was allowed to criticize him or the government at all. Somehow we survived that and many other times since. I don't know what's going to happen now. And in hackerspaces around the world, people are talking about this much more now, which I think is a positive thing.
Mm-hmm.
But we'd have no idea how negative things might get. So it's really important that we're discussing the possibilities, including that this guy will be kept somewhat in check by other aspects of our government and our society. So we don't want to go into a place of total despair, but we've got to keep our eyes open for the reality of the situation.
Thing is, Mitch, you'd be surprised how quickly those things fall apart, how quickly the media toes the line, how quickly the other forms of government just basically become people who sign everything that that the leader wants. It might seem inconceivable, but it's set up in that way.
It's the same reason that those surveillance structures are already there. Those same media, consolidated media outlets are all there in place as tools for that executive authority, and will fall into place, as you said. And without the diversity of outlets and opinions and resources flourishing, we then become the effect of those systems. And And imagine the narrow scope of technology then, when it's mainly suited to subjugate.
And this is why it's such a mistake to set that apparatus up so that it can be used in the future. This is one of the harshest criticisms of the Obama administration, is setting up more of this. That, okay, you know, maybe you thought Obama was great and he wouldn't abuse it. His administration was fine, but no guarantee in this country that's going to stay that way. In fact, no guarantee anywhere it's going to stay that way. And once you build it, it's not going to be dismantled. So that's something that, unfortunately, I think a lot of people are finally learning.
Yeah, well, having come from a place where just 8 decades ago things were going very much awry.
Oh, that's right. Germany, yeah.
Yeah, that place. And there were many differences 80 years ago in Germany than now, but there are some really disturbing similarities as well. And then not long after that, the Soviets going in and setting up a government where the Stasi did some pretty amazing things as far as surveillance goes, and they definitely weren't doing it in the best interest of the citizens of former GDR. So
you're not criticizing Russia, are you?
I wouldn't.
Because I don't know if that's allowed anymore.
I think I just put myself on a blacklist. So, but I'm probably already on it anyways.
We'll take you off.
So, but yeah, this has certainly been a topic of discussion everywhere I've been in Berlin. You know, and I just look down everywhere I go, and there are these little bronze paving stones with the names of people who were carted away and killed in concentration camps mm-hmm. in front of apartment buildings. That's one of the subtle ways Germans, especially in Berlin, keep track of the history, good and bad.
I guarantee you that any country, any part of the world, any time in history, if you had asked the people right before some atrocity happened, are you capable of this? They would have answered strongly, no, we're better than that. We're not. We're not better than that. Nobody is immune from this. And we need to pay close attention and monitor this and report and never shut up, never stop talking about these things. And always listen as well. Support each other. Listen. And that's what I hope we remain here at WBAI, where we become a safe place for people to speak out on whatever it is that they want to get out there. In fact, on that note, we'll be taking phone calls a little bit later on in the show. I wanted to focus just a little bit of time, though, on what happened last Friday when the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, known as ODNI, for those of you who don't follow the acronyms, released a declassified version of its report on Russia's interference in the U.S. presidential election. And that report, which draws on intelligence gathered by the FBI, CIA, and NSA, concludes with high confidence that Russian President Vladimir Putin ordered an influence campaign in 2016 aimed at the U.S. presidential election that included hacking the personal email accounts of Democratic Party officials and political figures. Now, a lot of this has already been reported publicly, but there are some key findings in that report, such as the precise nature of the link between WikiLeaks and the Russian hackers that had not been disclosed before. There's all kinds of analyses of this online, both supporting its findings and questioning its findings. And I think both of those viewpoints are extremely important. My way of looking at this, and tell me if you disagree, when confronted with the possibility that the Russians hacked into anything, whether it's Gmail, whether it's a government computer, whether it's, you know, a website, a database, you name it, whether they hacked into something in an attempt to influence the election, my first reaction to that is, of course they did. Of course they did. I mean, if you say anything of that nature and say that the U.S. government attempted to do this, our reaction would be, of course they did, because that's what they do. We don't need to see the logs. We don't need to see all the information. We just kind of in the back of our minds know. Of course, you do need to see that information if you're investigating the case yourself. That's a whole other discussion. But yeah, this is how it works. So I do believe that, yeah, there was influence here. But my next point, or my next exclamation, which many people don't agree with, is so what? You know, yeah, this is what happens. What do you expect? This is what they're going to do. It should not be a big deal. It should not be something that we are surprised by. And it should not be something that causes all kinds of hostilities and ramifications, because this is how the game is played. So, you know, I don't know why people are so busy trying to say, oh, it's impossible, the Russians would never do this, or people saying, "My God, they did this. It's time for World War III." No, this is, you know, encrypt things, keep things secure, use a little intelligence, and it won't be so bad, you know, as far as when your information gets leaked. And I know there's a lot of information did not get leaked, and maybe we'll learn something when that happens in the days ahead.
Yeah, you got to expect that a lot of people looking at the U.S. election around the world were timing certain things around this.
Yes.
It goes to show how big and powerful a machine this economy and government power is in the world and in our own territory. So it's of course something that everyone is looking at, and that they wouldn't be doing this, it would be probably more suspicious. So I do agree that we can't be so surprised.
Mitch.
Yeah, I'm not.
But then Bernie.
I'm not surprised at stuff like this at all, because, you know, like you say, it is the way the game's played. I don't want to blame the victim and say they shouldn't have done whatever and it's their own fault. But the thing is, whenever the mainstream media, in my mind, whenever the mainstream media puts out something that vilifies some other place, like in this case Putin, he's very easy to vilify, just like Stalin was not all that many decades earlier.
Not just like Stalin, but
Vilified
in a similar
like
vein. Yes, okay.
Yeah, in a similar vein as Stalin was vilified.
Yes.
But why is this being put out? So there are all these different places, like the Hillary campaign wants to have an easy out for explaining why they lost. And if they can blame it on the Russians, so be it.
I have a question for predominantly people on the left. Are we going to drop the Hillary thing at any time in the near future? Because who cares? You know, she lost. It's over. It's done. Do we need to constantly go back and say, oh, you know, she's trying to blame somebody else? Who cares whose fault it was? We need to focus on, you know, the big monster coming up over the hill approaching us right now. And I don't see people doing that nearly enough.
Yeah, well, it's easier to look back at this point, I suppose, for a lot of people. We've got to really look at the way things are. And there are other people in roles in our government that are going to be using this information about Russia for things that are very much not positive. So, yeah, keep an eye on that, too.
Yeah, right. Go ahead, Bernie.
Go ahead, Bernie.
Oh, thanks. As you and Mitch just said, this is how the game is played. Major governments around the world, even minor governments like Cuba, we all spy on all our governments spy on each other. Mm-hmm. And the United States of America is probably the biggest player in that game, and has not only been spying on other countries, but trying to influence and actually succeeding in throwing elections, staging coups, that sort of thing, going back many generations. This is our country's history. So I play a little mental exercise whenever I'm listening to a news story or reading one. And as Mitch just pointed out, whether there was some political person or the news media is vilifying some other country for trying to interfere in our stuff, or whatever the story is, if it's vilifying another country, I try the mental game I play with myself is, does this apply to anything the United States has done? If you swap the names with whatever country is being vilified in the news story, if you put, you know, USA in there, can it factually apply in any situation in our history? And almost always, yes.
Yeah, and again, you know, that does not negate what's going on. I think we should be focusing on all aspects of it and not simply say, well, you know, because we do it too, then I guess it doesn't matter. It matters whenever anybody does it. We should be focusing on it. But let's not pretend that our hands are clean, because they most certainly are not.
Yeah, and how Bernie put this interests me very much, because looking at what's going on right now, with every angle you can, just from, I think, a very hacker perspective, which is trying to see things as they are, not as you're told they are, trying to put your mind put yourself in the shoes of one side, of the other side. Does this all make sense? Does this all balance? And I think that's part of why I think we're looking now at a world, as I think we have for a generation or two, in which being a hacker and acting and behaving and learning and thinking as a hacker does itself is becoming sort of a political act. And that is, I think, one of the big reasons that it's really it would be really hard to truly separate the political from the hacker, like at our events and on our radio program.
Right. But without becoming preachy and boring, I detest that. I want to have a dialogue, a good conversation back and forth.
Even if you're a hacker for hire and leaking things for regimes or for your favorite candidate. It's all, as you said, a political act. I really like that. The one thing you mentioned about the security and Hillary's emails, that was brought up by the big monster that's coming over the horizon as a way to deflect. He's deflecting, saying that the DNC's security was not as good as the RNC, which it sets it up perfectly to deny the entire leaking motive and everything, like that it was the security that kept anything from anything untoward about Donald Trump from coming out. And then now that completely goes against what we're now hearing about this the Blaze or BuzzFeed thing. Of other things that the Russians and the intelligence agencies are quote unquote holding against Donald Trump. I honestly think the intelligence agencies didn't know what to do. They just sat him down and made him watch a video of him doing something awful, and they're in on it. They're like, we can't think of anything else. We got this on you. Don't drag us through the mud again.
You know, without saying whether or not there's any truth to any of this, the fact that we're discussing term-ending scandals 9 days before the term begins,
it
tells me that we're in for one hell of a ride.
Oh, absolutely. This is going to be a show like you've never seen. It's uncanny the amazing things that we have to actually check and verify. And that was a tactic during the campaign, and that there's all indications have kind of pointed to the fact that a lot of that mode and that spirit hasn't really left this administration. It's pretty much carrying on the partisanship and divisiveness and anyway back to hacking.
We never left hacking, but I just want to say, you know,
it's crazy.
There are a lot of depressed people. We've been talking about this since the day after Election Day.
Right.
But, you know, I'm not feeling that depression with the people around me. I'm feeling passion, a lot of good conversations, a lot of spirit, and that's going to continue. And I think in that sense, this might be a really good thing for us because it's a good slap across the face. No one likes getting slapped across the face, but once you have gotten slapped across the face, you wake up a little bit and you start doing things a little bit differently, and maybe that's what we need. And if we stick together and back each other up and realize that there's so many of us and that we have a lot to say, I dare say we'll come out of this a lot stronger than we came into this. Just remember, there were so many people. We're here in New York. It's easy for us. There are so many people in other parts of the country that don't have that support network that might feel like they're alone, and we need to make sure they know they are not alone, whether it's because you're in a particular social group, have particular preferences, come from particular backgrounds, or are a little too smart. There's all kinds of reasons why you might feel like you're in this by yourself, but believe me, you are not.
Or your context is not allowing you to express yourself the way you'd like to, a myriad of other things that you find make you a little bit different than the thrust of society is trying to impart to everyone. And this difference that we have is knowledge, too. And don't forget our keen understanding of a lot of this technology and a lot of the systems, as well as the legislation and stuff behind it, as we've talked about many, many times on this show through experience. Many of us have had either around the legal system or vicariously through stories that have impacted the hacking community over the years. So I think all of those things are tremendously to our advantage, and we bring those skills to this. And as you said, it's a slap. It is a slap, I think, because we should have seen our involvement, our place, our importance long ago, just given how much hacking was in the news and in the the forefront of talking about politics or whatever, whether it's behind the scenes hacking between parties or whomever, it was ever present, omnipresent, and as important as ever for us to help interpret and share and hear other people's insights on, so that we can together draw our truths and conclusions and build a future that doesn't resemble our worst fears.
Now, Mitch, I know you've been involved for many years dealing with these kinds of feelings of helplessness from people, isolation, and depression that many people have in our community and in that community have had to deal with. You were on a panel, in fact, called Geeks and Depression, I believe, at one of the Hope conferences. How do you see this going? Do you think this is something that will help empower people, or do you see people perhaps getting more disenfranchised as a result of the changes?
Well, at first, people are feeling disenfranchised and in shock and despair. Community is all about people looking out for one another, and that's what you and Kyle have just been saying. We have to look out for each other. We have to support each other and make sure everyone knows that they're not alone in whatever it is they're feeling. Back in the 1980s, when the Reagan administration was coming into power, it was really effective in getting people to feel if you disagreed at all with what was going on, that you are just an alien. And it was very alienating. We have to be sure that we, with the communities that we have and the internet now that a lot of people have access to, that the word gets out that people aren't alone, that we are supporting each other. And it's really important that we have this ongoing discussion.
And very important for us to not get lost in the fragmentation of our affinity groups, of our media, of our knowledge or expertise, experience, or even personal eccentricities or whatever it may be. I mean, we need that camaraderie to be something that supports people coming together and having strength through that, and not be lost to despair, because that is when people don't have a chance. I've talked about this on other in other instances about veterans and friends and family I've known. They didn't have a chance, right? I didn't even get a chance to talk to them as a friend and really like open up what they're going through. And I don't like that, and I don't want that for anyone else. I really hope that people don't suffer in silence and they actually express themselves and come together around solving problems together, so that people, like you said, E, that are isolated, that are out in other parts of the country, that may not know where they can get support or learn more or feel like they're affecting their world or the country proper, that they have that chance to thrive and to become who they're destined to be and not just disappear to
despair. Let me just interrupt
despair.
For a second. Continue that thought.
I'm done.
The phone number is 347-335-0818 if people want to join in on the conversation. Please continue.
Yeah. So to draw an analogy with the Reagan administration, there was this guy, James Wadd, who was put in place of the EPA to dismantle it. And that was the best thing that could have happened for the environmental movement back then. What we're facing right now is not just the destruction of environmental movement, but perhaps the very democracy form of government, not only in our country, but around the world, any possibility we have left. So hopefully a slap in the face isn't really a good thing to feel, but a wake-up call and people coming together to do – it's really important all the time for us to do all the cool stuff we do, and this is just a really important reminder that that is really true.
I can hardly wait till the third season of Mr. Robot. I don't know what they're going to come up with to top this. Let's take a phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Go ahead.
Yes, it's Tom from the Bronx.
Tom, we haven't heard from you in a dog's age. Wow.
Well, it's hard to get through, I suppose. But
I suppose
anyway,
so. Only one phone line, though.
Yeah, I'd like to say this. It's a catastrophe in ways coming. I think Hillary Clinton actually threw the election to Trump. I got a bad feeling about that.
Well, that's one hell of a tactic on her part. What would be in it for her?
Well, I don't know, but maybe they feel Trump could do a lot of hideous deeds that maybe she doesn't want to be connected to.
Okay, all right.
That's possible.
The hideous deeds, I can definitely see that.
Yeah, and we, I don't know what the heck we're going to do. I wonder how they're going to handle a lot of things. I wonder what's going to happen to people's pensions.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they're going to get a dollar a month or something. I mean, I really wonder.
Yeah, healthcare, immigrants, all kinds. There are just so many things to wonder what in God's name is going to happen. But just remember that everything that does happen, it's owned by them. It's their fault, the people that are doing this. So let's make sure they're accountable.
Yeah, well, we gotta hope for the best. That's all I could say.
All right, Tom, good to hear from you.
Just one
go ahead.
Thing.
Yes.
Peanut butter and banana sandwiches will go big time. That's what people ate during the Depression.
I never had one of those, but you know what? I will try it now.
That was big during the Depression.
Sounds like
ate that
something.
At a compulsion.
Wow. All right. Well, Tom, good hearing from you again.
All
stay,
right.
Stay
good
in touch.
To chat with you. Bye.
All right. Our phone number again, 347-335-0818. We only have one phone line, so whoever gets in the quickest is the person that we put on the air. Go ahead, Rob.
I like peanut butter and banana sandwiches.
I've never had that. I've had jelly. I've had...
Try it with a little honey on. It's great.
Is there a particular type of bread it works best with?
Whatever your preference is.
Whole wheat. We used to serve that and call it a monkey sandwich at a deli I worked at.
Peanut butter on raisin bread. That's surprisingly good. Let's take another phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. It's Delcini.
Oh, Delcini. How are you?
Hey, what's up? So I have a quick announcement because, you know, speaking of apparatuses.
Well, this is the place.
New York City Privacy Board meeting is coming up on January 19th. And if people want to know more, they can go to the URL bit.ly/privacyNYC.
And what kinds of things are discussed at these meetings?
In particular, first, we're going to focus on the Link NYC kiosks that have been installed all over the city.
Yes.
And this is a conversation that came about from Hope, because we had a talk there last time that, you know, touched on that, and we didn't really know what was going to happen at the time too much. The privacy guidelines on their website are very vague. And we don't know what our politicians have agreed into, which, you know, brought up the conversation, of course, how much are our politicians informed about this, and are they just giving away the store with regards to our privacy? So that started the conversation, and from there, you know, we're hoping to get some things moving on a local level, which I believe, with what was discussed on the show today, is one of the first things we need to one of the first arenas where we need to start.
Yes. Everything around you first, and move your way out towards your region. And
yes, definitely. Delcini, give out the information one more time about the meeting.
Yeah, I just realized I gave the wrong URL. So it's bit.ly, bit.ly/privacy. Hang on one second. I got to look this. I just made this URL. Actually, we made it easier. PRIV2017. So PRIV2017.
On Bit.ly. Okay, great. Mm-hmm. Thanks very much for that information.
Okay, bye.
All right, take care. And that's the kind of thing that we need to be spreading information about. It's happening all over the place.
Yeah, if you're looking for a way to get involved, start with groups like that in your area. Yeah.
Again, 347-335-0818 is our phone number.
And talking of getting involved, the NYC Privacy Board, that's a project that came together at our local 2600 meeting, which is also a great way to either get involved with the scene that's going on around you wherever you are in the world, or if you don't find one, start one yourself.
Absolutely.
Yep. Or a hackerspace.
Hackerspaces as well.
Those two.
Mm-hmm.
All
and,
kinds of things you can do.
Parties.
Some people have 2600 meetings at their hackerspaces.
Sure.
Which is good, but, you know, sometimes you want to get away from the computers and go out into the mainstream and see, you know, people walking down the street. That's the first meeting was our 2600 meeting here in New York City. And we met so many people that way that were not aware of what 2600 or hackers were all about, or were just aware of the mainstream definitions. So by all means, keep that in mind when you decide where to have your meetings. Let's take another phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Go ahead.
Hi. Is Rose from Flemington, New Jersey.
How you doing?
Great. I have to turn this damn radio down. It's giving me a hard time.
Please turn the radio down. I'm sorry about that.
Trying to get it off. Yeah, I just want to make a quick couple of points. That when Reagan came in, there were 45 cities with more than one. Oh, this radio is acting bad here. It won't go off. Let me attack this.
Yeah, we have a way of forcing our way through the radio waves.
Yeah, no, the thing is, I'm blind and I have to pull it out by the plug. Pull the plug, kid. Damn you. Why don't you behave?
Okay, well, now, so...
Here's a point.
Reagan, yes.
When Reagan came in, there were 45 cities in America which had more than one news outlet, and when he left, there were 17. And then we have to kind of look back a little bit further to the early 50s when he was tangled in with Julie Stein to get rid of the Stagecraft Union, working very closely with Hoover. And he received $400,000 in 1952 to stop that union. We have people in this country who actually believe that Reagan was a hero, but he was the one who shipped all the jobs overseas. Mm-hmm. And you can't get through that ignorance. And the Donald... I mean, the guy needs a... Anybody who brags about functioning on 3 hours of sleep
needs a hair burn
and a pee test.
That explains a lot, actually.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
How about three fabulous wives in 10 years cranking out, you know, the babies? It's just so strange.
Uh-huh.
Well, and I've got a comment for you.
Yes.
How about people in glass houses should not defecate in public?
Well, that's quite a concept. I'm going to try the rest of the night to get out of my head. But thanks thanks so much for that call and for those thoughts. And please keep them coming.
God bless you and keep up the good work.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Wow. we have the best callers in the world. We really do. Our email address, by the way, here at Off the Hook is oth@2600.com. Please write to us with your thoughts, comments, opinions, things like that.
I think it's people in glass houses don't need to defecate in public.
Let's just move on. Here's a story. Okay, thank you for that. You hear about this Alexa gone berserk. We had Alexa in the studio a couple of weeks ago, and people really like that. Alexa had fun, too. She wants to come back, but apparently she wants a script beforehand to know what we're going to ask her, because that song apparently took a lot out of her. Somebody on television, a TV anchor, said something on the air, and apparently Alexa's all over the country acted upon it. That's what the story says. A news presenter said, "I love the little girl saying Alexa ordered me a dollhouse." And apparently, what happened was people have Alexas that are sitting there. In fact, I'm probably driving them crazy right now because they're triggered by the word Alexa, or the name Alexa. They went and ordered a dollhouse for a lot of people. We don't have the one we brought in set up that way, but I understand it's possible to order things by voice. But I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think you need to verify before something actually gets shipped off to you. I don't know. I'd like to know for experimentation. I'd like to know how many Alexas are responding. If I say, Alexa, count to 10. How many of you are dealing with that right now? How many of your Alexas just started counting to 10? I could have done a lot worse. I know it's like a self-destruct command as well.
Or find the most expensive thing on Amazon.
Yeah. Or buy me a car. Alexa, buy a car. and let's see what happens.
Well, some people are clever and they pick one of the other wake words rather than Alexa. So if you say Echo, count to 10, you might set off a different
signal. Echo, count to 10. Amazon, count to 10. Those are the three. That's it.
I think you should
be able to pick whatever you want, I think. But then again, I didn't design the thing, so I don't really know. But I'd like to know more about that. I'd like to know if our Alexa demonstration a couple of weeks ago set off any others.
But it should be pointed out that you can turn off in your Alexa settings, if you have one of these, the ability to just order something by a voice command.
Yes. A lot of fun. A lot of things that we'll be able to do in the future as well. Play with it by all means, but never take it that seriously. Let's take another phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hello.
Hi. What's on your mind?
Happy New Year. Donald Trump's on my mind.
Oh, boy. What a surprise.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, I never voted for a Republican in my life. I'm 72 years old, but I voted for Donald Trump.
Oh, it's your fault.
I thought that Hillary had to be stopped. And I couldn't see myself voting for Cruz or any of the others. I voted for Bernie in the primary, and after he went down, I made my decision that Hillary had to be stopped and the Democrats had to be taught a lesson.
Can I ask you one question though? Did you vote for Jeff Sessions?
Well, I didn't vote for Jeff Sessions, but to tell you the truth, talk about crappy news. You know, all this stuff about Trump, about being a racist and everything else. The news puts it out, everybody listens to it, and that's all you hear. It's like a broken record. Oh, he's a racist, he's a homophobe, he's a this, he's a that. You know, the man has never dropped a bomb on anybody in his life. Hillary Clinton kills people. So did Obama kill people for 8 years, and nobody got out in the streets and said a damn thing about it.
Okay, well, first of all, Donald Trump is not in a position where he's supposed to be killing people, whereas every president of the United States unfortunately does have that power. In a month or so, I bet that Donald Trump will have killed people.
Yeah, why don't you write him a letter, ask him,
if that yeah, if that record keeps up, if that's maintained where Donald Trump kills nobody while he's president, then I'll agree with you. But it's really not fair to compare somebody who is in office as president to somebody who's a businessman who really shouldn't be killing anybody.
Well, none of them should have been. Well,
I agree.
Depends on how you look at life.
In a perfect world, but
killing people for millions of years.
Yeah, but that's the nature of our country and our that office. So, I would like Donald Trump to be the first president ever not to do that, but I don't see it happening.
You do raise a good point. They were not equals.
Makes friends with the Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
Putin will get rid of ISIS. We won't have to kill anybody.
Well, yeah, it sounds like you're listening to what he's saying. I don't know. Let's see what happens. You know, it's going to be very interesting. We have plenty of time to discuss and debate and compare notes. I just think, you know, for those people who say that they didn't like Hillary Clinton and that's why they either didn't vote or voted for Trump, just remember that all the people, including all the judges, Supreme Court justices, the people in his cabinet, those are people that you voted for as well. So just if you're good with that, fine. You know, you're good with that. But if you just were voting to send a message for one person, I think that was a big mistake.
Well, you got to have faith in your fellow citizens, I think.
I do. And I hope that we all come together in the future and have a drink over this episode we're about to go through.
Including all of the people that Trump spoke out against.
All right. Thanks for your call. Yes. All those people as well. Boy, okay, you know, I want to end with a sad story, because it is a sad story. And Bernie, I know you know something about this. Norway is, okay, I might have this wrong. They're making it illegal to listen to the radio, or is it something else?
Well, sort of. If it's a radio that receives FM, you know, like WBA broadcast on 99.5 megahertz FM, frequency modulation FM, it's been around for decades, invented by Edwin Armstrong, and it's a way to get pretty good fidelity audio from one point to another for free, at least from the receiver standpoint. And anybody can build an FM radio. It's not a proprietary technology, but here in the U.S., the FCC has tried to push everybody into something called HD radio or IBOC, in band on channel. It's been kind of a flop, but in Norway they went one step further and said, we are now turning off FM, all FM radio broadcast stations. And they all have to be digital using something called DAB, digital audio broadcasting, which is not a proprietary thing like HD radio is here in the U.S., but it's digital, and most radios don't receive it yet there. They're just trying to push everybody to buy these new radios. And two-thirds of Norwegians don't even want this. So we will be. It'll be interesting to see what the Trump administration does in this country with the FCC. He's gonna. He may keep Ajit Pai, one of my least favorite FCC commissioner, may put him in charge as the head guy. So we'll see what happens. But communications is important, and we have to follow this stuff.
Well, yes. Apparently, the shutdown is beginning today. With the northern town of Bodø. We were in Bodø, weren't we, Kyle?
I'm not sure. Norway. I think so.
We definitely passed through there. They're switching off their local network today. And by the end of the year, all FM broadcasts in Norway will have ended, replaced by digital audio broadcasting transmissions. Yes, and what Bernie says is right. They generally offer better sound quality. But, you know, kind of similar to what digital TV is like here in this country, you either get it or you don't. There's no fringe. And once it's out, it's out. And the signal range isn't quite as great. So there's advantages and disadvantages. And anytime you force a change like that, there's going to be some rough patches. And, you know, I don't know what's wrong with just analog radio. It works, and it's it reaches so many people, and it's magic, and that's why we do what we do. If you like what we do, if you don't like what we do, write to us, oth@2600.com. We'll be back again next week. Thanks, Mitch, for coming in.
You're welcome.
And we'll see you next time you pass through. And the rest of us will be back in 1 week. Stay tuned for the Personal Computer Show. Good night.
Hello world! Welcome to the Personal Computer Show, the original personal computer radio show. I'm Hank Key. My colleague is Joe King, and we're heard each Wednesday on the Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM, on the internet at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, and on WBAI-FM 99.5 on the radio at 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, broadcasting atop the Empire State Building. We live stream the WBAI broadcast on WBAI.org. Our website is www.pcradioshow.org. Everything old is new again. Remember vinyl records? Besides their audio qualities, vinyl records are optical and tactile. The consumer can appreciate their musical purchase in a physical world, which allows for a greater sense of nostalgia. What we know as vinyl records, which are more broadly gramophone records, really are made from vinyl. Polyvinyl chloride, to be precise, which is plastic commonly known as PVC.
PVC is a popular polymer used in everything from construction pipes to flooring to clothing and furniture. The basic raw material for polyvinyl chloride are salt and oil. The general breakdown is 57% chlorine, made from industrial salt, and 43% carbon from oil gas via ethylene. While black records are standard, the PVC used to make records is actually clear. It's actually a polycarbonate additive, carbon black, which makes many of the records we encounter black. One effect of this additive is a smoother flow and therefore lower noise floor. This is likely why black records are still the new black. Everything old is new again. It is calculated that 8 companies in Germany now turning out vinyl records. There are 23 in the United States, 10 in Britain, and 2 each in France and Italy. Around the world, sales of vinyl records are at their highest since 1997. Last year, 4.6 million vinyl records were sold in the United States, nearly 500% more than 5 years earlier. In Britain, 400,000 vinyl records were sold, a 50% increase. Across the globe, the industry reckons that sales of vinyl adds up to $171 million compared with $55 million 5 years earlier. That is a good rise in anyone's book. Increasingly, as the market for vinyl records grows, the owners of discarded pressing machines realize that they can command a price, so the price of a machine has skyrocketed. The going rate for an old machine is about $25,000. Not bad for a discarded metal in the corner of a warehouse. More and more people like the vinyl experience. It's not a digitally dead sound. There's a warm sound to it, and there is an appeal of vinyl that is more active way of listening to music. Some people like the experience of having to get up from their chair, putting the record on the player, and adjusting the stylus. These people are not nerds. They love vinyl. Some are spending a lot of money for the record players. So what is behind the renewed love for the old format? It may be similar to the appeal of books. Who can doubt the convenience and logic of carrying a library around on a computer card? But books do persist, probably in part because people like the feel of them. It's the triumph of old technology. You may think the market is one predominantly of aging people, the classic record nerd, but actually it's much younger, often people too young to remember the original vinyl heyday. While the poll shows that the 35 to 40 year range of people are the largest consumer group, which represents 28.5%. Younger buyers are also seeing the appeal of the format, with over a third, 35.3%, under the age of 35. Just under the half of the respondents were married, and men made up the majority of the self-selecting samples, 87.4%. There was one particular intriguing result. It also appears that the appeal of the vinyl isn't just limited to those with a turntable. 3.7% of the respondents said they bought it despite not owning one. That means they are collectors. So the new technology is not necessarily all digital. Analog has its virtues. And as you can see, there is a return to some of the technology that is analog, which is superior to digital. I looked at my audio equipment that I haven't used in a while, and sitting there is a Thorin's turntable, which is a very high-end unit that I've had many years ago, and now I find it's worth quite a bit. And people are now buying brand new turntables. And such an example is the Technics. There's a new Technics called the SL1200GR turntable, and I was in for a shock. The price for this turntable seems to have been, while it's not as expensive as last year's reissue, is not quite as cheap as some might have hoped. According to Gizmodo, the new standard model of this revamped SL1200 that was announced last week will cost $2,300 in Canada, which roughly translates to $2,000 in U.S. money. Last year's 1200 model was $4,000 each. The news will come as a blow to Technics fans looking to replace their old 1200. It is possible to get a pair of Pioneer PLX 1000 turntables for much less. Technics unveiled standard version of its updated SL1200 turntable. Earlier this week, Technics creative director told the New York Times why the company has turned away from DJs and towards the audiophile market with its reissue line of turntables. Our concept is analog records for hi-fi listening. He said DJs are fine too, but as a marketing target, it's problematic. We don't want to sell the 1200 as the best tool for DJing. The 1200 is a 1200. Despite the high price tag, the initial run of last year's limited 1200 GAE sold out in under 30 minutes when it went on sale in Japan. Wow, let me dig out my old hi-fi equipment. Kodak brings back a classic with Ektachrome. This revival to analog technology is not just limited to vinyl records. The list of discontinued film stocks is lengthy, and after Kodak pulled the plug on our beloved Kodachrome, it seemed likely any film could be next on the chopping block. But perhaps those dark days are behind us, because today Kodak announced the company will be bringing back a different film stock, Ektachrome. It was discontinued in 2012. Kodak's decision to raise it from the dead is directly related to a recent increase in demand for analog film. Yep, you heard that right. So does this mean that film photography is about to start down a similar path of revival as we've seen from vinyl records? Maybe, which are currently selling at a 25-year high. I sure wouldn't mind. And this was the announcement from Kodak. Sales of professional photographic films have been steadily rising over the last few years, with professionals and enthusiasts rediscovering the artistic control offered by manual processes and the creative satisfaction of a physical end product. The reintroduction of one of the most iconic films is supported by the growing popularity of analog photography and a resurgence in shooting film. Resurgence in the popularity of analog photography has created demand for new and old film products alike. Ektachrome is a color reversal film and was developed in the early 1940s, used for decades by the National Geographic photographers. It's been long favored and due to its fine grain and excellent color reproduction. So come the end of 2017, you'll once again will be able to pick up a 35mm roll of it, and you'll likely got a bearded, glasses-wearing hipster with a turntable to thank for that. So what do you think of the prospect of analog revival of film? Hey, wait a minute. I got to pull out all my old Nikon film cameras. I really enjoyed using that equipment. Not limiting the announcement to the revival of Ektachrome film, Kodak released an upgraded and enhanced version of a Kodak Super 8 camera. It was first launched in 1965. The Kodak Super 8 format was one of the most influential development in amateur filmmaking, and now it's back with an all-new kind of development in amateur filmmaking, and now it's back. First launched in 1965, Kodak Super 8 format was one of the most influential development in amateur filmmaking, and now it's back with an all-new kind of camera. The news is that Kodak is enabling the next generation of filmmakers with access to an upgraded and enhanced version of the same analog technology. From its beginnings as a home movie media of the 60s, today's Super 8mm film is alive and well and making it possible for virtually anyone to bring the unmistakable look and feel of real film to the screen. More than 50 years after its introduction, this small-gauge film still provides an easy, inexpensive way for students, enthusiasts to work at film resolutions and color depths. The following is a reaction by Steven Spielberg to the Kodak announcement. When I watch the news, I expect and I want it to look like live television. However, I don't want that in my movies. I want our century-plus medium to keep its filmic look, and I like seeing very fine, swimming grain up there on the screen. To me, it's just more alive, and it imbues an image with mystery, so it's never literal. I love movies that aren't literally up in my face, with images so clear there's nothing left to our imagination. Had I shot it on a digital camera, the Omaha beach landings in Saving Private Ryan would have crossed the line for those that found them almost unbearable. Paintings done on a computer and paintings done on a canvas requires an artist to make us feel something. To be the cursor or the brush, that's the question. And certainly both can produce remarkable results, but doesn't that same hold true for the cinematic arts, digital or celluloid? Viva La Difference. Shouldn't both be made available for an artist to choose?
Excuse me for interrupting, Hank, but something was bothering me. That clickety-clack in the background kept reminding me of something, and then suddenly I remembered, everything old is new again. 1940s, maybe as late as the late 40s, early 50s, on the radio, a man named Walter Winchell. Everybody listened to him. It was the most widely listened to show in 1948. And what did he do between segments when he was changing the news story? Clickety-clack. The typewriter, that was Walter Winchell. He was the